Johnson Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
News, talk, and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. A strong warning for you this hour. Police in Louisville have now released body cam footage from yesterday's bank rampage, and it is pretty disturbing.
The body cam footage shows the first two Louisville police officers who respond to the shooting. When they arrive, gunfire can clearly be heard. At several points, we hear Officer Corey Galloway as the suspect fires on them.
He's shooting straight through these windows, right towards the officer.
The other officer, Nicholas Wilt, was critically wounded. That portion was not shown.
The shooter has an angle on that officer. We need to get up there.
Eventually, the gunman is shot and killed. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
President Biden has officially arrived in Northern Ireland to mark the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement.
Make sure the Irish Accords and the Windsor Agreement stay in place. Keep the peace.
Here at home, Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg is now suing Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan for trying to interfere with his prosecution of former President Trump. WCBS reporter Marcia Kramer has more.
Chairman Jordan's subpoena is an unconstitutional attempt to undermine an ongoing New York felony criminal prosecution and investigation, Bragg said, claiming the subpoena, quote, is an unprecedented, illegitimate interference by Congress that lacks any legal merit and defies basic principles of federalism.
The Pentagon's still tracking how Kylie classified documents ended up online this week. CBS's Olivia Gazes tells us what they're looking for.
IP addresses for printers, for computers, possible date stamps on the photographs that appear to have been taken of these documents. So investigators will be looking for those, as well as looking at some of those distinctive items that we see visible on the desk behind the photographs of these documents.
The Pentagon says some are related to the war in Ukraine and could pose a threat to national security. Meantime, the Biden administration's giving the Congressional Gang of Eight access to classified material recovered from President Biden, former President Trump, and former Vice President Pence. CBS's Catherine Herridge.
It's very significant that some of the records that were recovered at the former president and current president's homes and the vice president are being shared with Congress. These lawmakers see this as a victory for oversight for the legislative branch because they feel that they have a right to understand what the national security implications are.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen's relatively upbeat on the state of the global economy.
The outlook is reasonable. It's certainly stronger, brighter than the last time we had the annual meetings in October.
But the International Monetary Fund is worried about a global recession. This is CBS News.
Streamline how you hire with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
In business, everything your employees do impacts your brand, including what they wear. Cintas has high-performance workplace apparel for almost every job imaginable. From work shirts and pants to polos and khakis to oxfords or t-shirts, these clothes move, breathe, and look great. Your team gets the styles they like, you convey the image you want. And Cintas service includes weekly laundry and delivery. To learn more, visit Cintas.com.
Oh, I'm ready!
And get ready for the workday.
For the ones finding new ways to ensure the job always gets done. For the ones wearing many hats. For the ones who are hands-on, even from far away. And the ones keeping business moving forward. We are Grainger, offering professional-grade industrial supplies, plus real-time product availability and access to experts ready to answer your toughest questions. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Locally grown, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Don't search through the phone book for hours looking for help. Don't waste time being transferred from department to department looking for answers. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, simply dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Free and confidential information and referral is available throughout Central Wisconsin. Dial 211 and get connected and get answers.
The Elks Lodge of Wisconsin Rapids is a proud community supporter, and it's easy for you to be a part of their work. Have fun and join them for their weekly Wednesday bingo night, or enjoy their full restaurant menu on Wednesday and Friday. And don't forget their excellent Friday fish fry. Or better yet, become an Elk today and be part of the nearly $30,000 they give back to the community each year. Call 715-423-1930. 715-423-1930. Elks care and Elks share. Become an Elk today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR.
Mainly clear skies tonight with a low of 56. Southwest winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. High of 81 tomorrow, sunny skies. Clear skies tomorrow night, lows level off around 56. Upper 70s Thursday, turning cooler Friday with highs in the mid 70s and showers possible.
For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 77.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
Joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Questions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Cody Cuff, Penny Cuff,
because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Clinic, honoring health and tradition.
Hey, Zoe, we got a jam-packed show today here on Native Roots Radio. We have Connie Walker, who's a podcaster, journalist, who I really was able to keen in on when she did the documentary Finding Cleo, which was very emotional and very intense podcast.
Yeah, I think it's one of the most well-done podcasts, true crime podcasts, I'd say investigatory journalism that I've ever heard, just because she does such a good job of, I don't know, maintaining the integrity of the story and not getting lost in the weeds with like leads or anything. She just keeps it so true to what the family wants to find out about their relative. And there's just so much heart in her work. It's really, really incredible to see, you know, another Native woman doing that type of work and getting credit and, you know, the acknowledgement she deserves for it.
Wow, really good points. Really good points. And Connie Walker, and she's going to be talking about her latest project, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's. And you can hear that on Spotify exclusively. So we just want to let people know. And it's free, too. So you can get on Spotify. You don't have to pay for the service. You just have to be on their platform. So that's pretty exciting. Also, we got some news here. And I know... I'd really like to talk to you just about this in the first segment, Zoe, but I'm going to say there's a new report that outlines steps for the University of Minnesota to repair its relationships with tribes. The U stopped shy of saying whether it would adopt the report's recommendation or not. So, Zoe, do you want to fill our listening audience in some of this, and I'll jump in with you?
Yeah, so this report is a 554-page document that's coming from the Truth Project. And the Truth is short for Towards Recognition and University Tribal Healing. This project was started back in 2020 when the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council issued two executive orders, one calling on the university to return Indigenous human remains, and another calling on it to fulfill its obligations to the 11 tribal nations in Minnesota. You can actually find the letter that the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council wrote to the U of M. It's an open letter. You can read it. It's very well done, and I think it just really highlights you know, I feel like they almost did too much of the work for the U of M, like by really outlining exactly what they need to do, which is important that the U of M, of course, understands that. But it's just, it's hard to always see, you know, Indigenous nations having to kind of do the work to fix the problem that the oppressor created for them. I guess that's kind of my, my opinion on it. But this is a really, really huge report. I mean, again, over 500 pages. So I hope that there's lots to come from this. I think if I've read correctly, Robert, they're still waiting on the U of M to make comments. I mean, it did just come out recently, right?
And I think they just, the article in the Star and Trib just said they were just shy of recognizing it. So in other words, they probably have the report and they're not willing to maybe possibly say, yes, we did a wrong thing. You know, a part of the history that they found out, or I shouldn't say they found out, but reported on, Zoe, which really, really kind of blows my mind, and not really, is that, you know, some of the original people like Sibley and Alexander Ramsey, the first governors, were really part of this land grab and treaty balking that the university, that I've heard rumblings about over the years, but here it is in a report, Zoe.
Yeah, and just to clarify for listeners too, you know, we use the term land grab, which is, I believe, the more correct term. But a lot of universities and, you know, textbooks and things would say land grant, like a gift almost. It's just this really tricky, slight change of language around it, but I think it's really important. And the Truth Project does call attention to that because, you know, as we see with settler colonialism so much in our community and the way it's affected us, is the U.S. government or the powers that be using language to kind of avoid accountability for the harms that they've committed towards our communities. So this is one iteration of that. And the land grab universities were part of the Morrill Acts of 1862 and 1890. And so those were created to give colleges or educational institutions land to create, you know, educational institutions and especially agricultural colleges. So the U of M is a university that greatly benefited from this. I think the Truth Project said that they mapped over 186,709 acres of land that Congress granted Minnesota between 1851 and 1868 through the Morrill Acts. So that is a lot of land. And we've talked previously, Robert, you know, about Fond du Lac starting to receive some of that land back. But honestly, it all needs to go back. I mean, that is so many acres of land. And especially thinking about our communities, and I just always think about our relatives, obviously in the Twin Cities, our unhoused relatives who do not have anything. And then also our relatives up north who live in rural areas and live in, you know, subsidized housing that is not built well, you know. And right. So this is pretty incredible that they were able to come out with this report.
Well, listen to part of this report, too. I'm reading here, for Red Lake Nation in northwest Minnesota, Goodwin explored the history of medical research that was conducted by the University of Minnesota doctors on young Red Lake children in the 60s. So that's within my lifetime.
that's not long ago at all. And not to mention all of the, you know, there's so much experimentation on Black and brown bodies, but that is just really, that's really hard to hear. And I know that, remind me of her name, Robert, the young woman who did the research, was one of the research assistants.
Miss Goodwin. She's from Red Lake. Miss Goodwin, and I want to say Adriana Goodwin. And I've seen her do a presentation on this and wanted to get her on the show, but I think she was waiting for this report to come out before she was willing to come on. So we're going to probably reach out to her. But this is interesting. Just in the last couple of weeks, Zoe, we've covered the genocide of Ho-Chunk people being removed here by almost the same actors that we're talking about, Alexander Ramsey and Sibley, who are probably heroes to some people in the state of Minnesota because of all the things that they put up and, all these good things they did, supposedly. But how they got there is what's eking out right now. And what blows my mind, too, Zoe, is that it's 2023 and we're just learning this stuff.
Right, right. And, many Native people, most of us, have known this forever or are known of this for a very long time. But it's also definitely true that our communities, due to not having enough access to higher education, don't know these histories. I think that was one of the biggest things I really came to terms with in my 4 years at McAllister, was that I had to go to this school that's like 70K to go to just to learn the history about my own people. Lots of points raised in this report.
Well, let's keep on top of this. This is really interesting, and maybe reach out to Shannon Gieshek or somebody from Red Lake. This is such important work that our Natives are doing, and it's sad but good that it's done by a Native warrior. It's a kind of a double-edged sword for me, because it would be great to have this in our history books, but we have to do our own research and bring these points up, Zoe. So up next, we got Connie Walker. Really excited. You're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake.
We are your relatives.
We are your relations.
Brothers.
Sisters.
Sons.
Daughters.
And some of us are your grandchildren.
We are your community. Historically, we held places of honor and respect. Because of the impact of colonization, some of us are rejected, thrown out from family, friends, and community, set up as targets for sexual violence, sex trafficked, humiliated, tortured, and murdered. Everybody has the right to be safe. We are your relatives. Remember,
homophobia is not traditional.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
The Loons are marching in to a new season. Join us Saturday, April 15th at 7:30 p.m. as your Loons take on Orlando City SC. Get your tickets today at mnufc.com.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Yes, they are. Hey, we're here and so excited to have...
Serving central Wisconsin since 1940.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
People are excited to hear, will be excited to hear this broadcast tonight.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I'm glad it worked out.
Well, I heard about you, and I mentioned to you this a little bit, is that our state senator who before she was a state senator, was a media specialist in a school. So she's all about books and podcasts and things. And she recommended this, your original Finding Cleo podcast to me and to our audience. And I could not put it down. And being an adoptee, it was very emotional for me to see how this just affected everybody, from the older brother to the mother, and how she triumphed in her age, later age, and but just the sadness that I felt that we find from, you know, part of the murdered, missing Indigenous people. Missing people is our adoptees, I feel like.
Mm. Yeah, no, I have heard that quite a lot, just from other people who were part of the 60 Scoop in Canada, or who were adopted out in the U.S. Just, you know, I think that that's kind of one of the things I love about storytelling and about doing these kind of deep dives and podcasts, is how the power of storytelling has an ability to connect us. And I think that for so many Indigenous people, you know, it's really harmful not to see yourself represented in media, not to see yourself represented in stories. And so, you know, with first Missing and Murdered and now Stolen, with those podcasts, it's just been incredible to see how much these deep dives, these really in-depth stories, and this investigative journalism can connect us across nations and across generations. Because, you know, I think that in we have this shared experience of colonization, and there's something that we can all relate to in those stories.
Yeah, definitely. Before we get into your latest podcast, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's, I'd like to just to get a little background on you and what got you going on this, and not so much as a journalist and transitioning into a podcast, and how did you get going?
Well, I was at the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, for about 20 years. And most of that time was as like a reporter in the news service. And so, you know, for a long time, there just was very little interest in hearing any stories from Indigenous people and communities. And that started to change. And where we really found like a connection I think the reason why that there was little interest in stories was because there was this belief that people didn't care. People didn't think our stories mattered. People didn't think they were important. And then when we started to shift to digital media, we created this hub at CBC called CBC Aboriginal at the time. It's now called CBC Indigenous, but it was like our way to funnel all the Indigenous stories that were happening across the country that CBC was reporting on into one space. And it was this digital space. And for the first time, we actually had proof that there was like a large, not just an audience interested in our stories, but a large audience interested in our stories. And we were able to connect with people in really new and exciting ways. And I think that, you know, for me as a journalist, that was so energizing. And I could see the potential. I could see how, you know, there was this opportunity to continue to build and grow on that. But the challenge that we had at CBC News was that we were still so focused on TV and radio. And I love radio, and I worked in TV for many years. But it felt like our window was shrinking. It was getting harder and harder and harder to tell stories, and the actual time we had to tell them was shrinking down to like minutes and seconds, really. And I had started listening to podcasting, and one of the first stories about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls that I reported on for TV, I remember this frustration I had when the story was over. Like, I was grateful that we were able to highlight her story, and it was on the national newscast, and there was a big web feature. But I remember feeling like there was so much of her life and so much of her community and so many things that I knew were connected to her story, but that we weren't able to include. We weren't able to connect the dots in such a short amount of time with the limited space that we had. And that was the first time we thought about doing a podcast. And then the next story that we did, you know, again, it was supposed to be a 2-minute news story. And we were out there and we were supposed to be gone for a couple of days. It turned into like over a week and flying to Northern British Columbia to investigate the unsolved murder of Alberta Williams. And I remember my producer, Marnie, being like, so when are we thinking of launching this? And she was thinking, and it was April, she was thinking of a matter of weeks, you know, like when could we publish this story? And I said, I'm thinking of a fall launch. Like, I think we could do a podcast. And we basically were able to convince our bosses and managers at CBC to let us try to do a podcast. And that's one thing that I'm so grateful to CBC for, honestly, is just the ability to be supported to experiment, to try new things, because I did a lot of new things at CBC. And from the get-go, I loved it. It was a lot harder. We had no idea what we were doing. It was extremely stressful. But it was a way that we could finally connect the dots and help people understand how a single woman or girl who was missing or murdered was connected to this bigger history, this bigger story of colonization and how it's impacted our communities and our lives that hadn't been told before, that had been ignored. And I think using the incredible tools that you have with a serialized narrative podcast was really perfect, I think, in terms of diving into these communities and these stories.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, we're here with Connie Walker. Her latest project is Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's. Let's talk a little bit about that. Let's jump into that, because what is striking is that you told the story, finding Cleo, about this family, and now this this got personal, your next story. And so when you're creating, and you have a feeling, and it's got to be difficult to tell a story without really getting really emotionally wrapped up into it. And I think having your father and his history, and I don't want to give too much away, but that had to be a hard project to jump into for many reasons.
Yeah, it was extremely, extremely difficult for sure. But I think that we were talking before about the previous podcast that I have done. So I've done four seasons now, like a story about Alberta Williams, Cleo Semaginis, Jermaine Charlot, and then Surviving St. Michael's about my father. But in each of these previous seasons, like I was emotionally invested in all of those. I was wrapped up in all of them in a deeply emotional way, because, you know, there were so many things in each of their stories that I related to, that I could see were connected to my community and my family. And I think that that's part of why I want to do this, is like this shared experience that we have as Indigenous people, whether you're in Canada or the United States, is so important to find those connections. And so I was always, you know, invested emotionally in the previous podcast, but it was really different taking on a story about my dad. But as soon as I heard that story from my brother, you know, I knew that I couldn't put it away. Like, I was like, it didn't really honestly feel like an option to like move on and do something else. Like I felt like I had seen the power of storytelling, I think, in terms of healing from trauma in the previous podcast that I had done. And I've also been studying trauma and learning about post-traumatic stress disorder, and how one of the most successful therapies is this therapy called exposure therapy, where like so much of your life you're trying to hide from your trauma or ignore it or not think about it. And you do so, like you spend so much time and effort and energy and distracting yourself from thinking about this terrible thing. And that's totally understandable. And I did that for so long. But it wasn't until I decided to shine a spotlight on it, on some of that, and expose it, that I was really able to process it and to move on from it. And it feels like
locally grown radio from Vesper to Plover. We are your home for news, talk, and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Gina Beauclair.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really missed you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a minute, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? Our imagination, our sense of wonder, and our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other and build family memories we will carry with us forever. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. It's easy. Just put in your zip code to find family-friendly outdoor destinations near you. You'll also find guides to free activities, games, and amazing forest facts. Give the magic of the outdoors to your kids and reconnect with your family. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy. You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year. At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local. I can send you with a link.
Okay.
Smart.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Here's Heather with the weather.
Well, it's beautiful out there, sunny and 75, almost a little chilly in the shade. Now, let's get a read on the inside of your car. It is hot. You've only been parked a short time and it's already 99 degrees in there. Let's not leave children in the back seat while running errands. It only takes a few minutes for their body temperatures to rise, and that could be fatal.
Cars get hot fast and can be deadly. Never leave a child in a car. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Tired of low or no connectivity? Do you live in BTN, Bug Tussle Nowhere? We want to talk to you. Bug Tussle brings high-speed internet to the places others don't. No contracts, no data caps. Truly unlimited internet. Call 877-227-0924.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Mainly clear skies tonight with a low of 56. Southwest winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. High of 81 tomorrow, sunny skies. Clear skies tomorrow night, lows level off around 56. Upper 70s Thursday, turning cooler Friday with highs in the mid 70s and showers possible. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 77.
Affordable healthcare without judgment. And everyone deserves a healthcare provider who stands firm on these beliefs. This is the Planned Parenthood experience at any one of our 22 health centers across Wisconsin that offer reproductive healthcare services for everyone. Book your appointment today at ppwi.org. That's ppwi.org and get the care you deserve, because we will provide that care no matter what.
Todos merecen la libertad sobre su propio cuerpo. Todo el mundo merece el derecho a elegir. Todos merecen acceso a una atención médica económica y de calidad sin juicios. Y todos merecen un proveedor de atención médica que se mantenga firme en estas creencias. Esta es la experiencia de Planned Parenthood en cualquiera de nuestros 22 centros de salud en Wisconsin, que ofrecen servicios de salud reproductiva para todos. Haz una cita hoy en ppwi.org y obtenga la atención que se merece, porque nosotros le brindaremos esa atención, pase lo que pase.
Self-monitor your blood pressure in 4 easy-to-remember steps. Self-monitoring is power. Visit managerbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association, in partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
I heard about Connie with Finding Cleo documentary, a podcast, kind of a murder mystery too. And I've been telling everybody that I ever wants to listen to me to listen to that show. And then also the new newer one, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's. I'm just tongue tied here, Connie. I just that's why don't we talk a little bit about Stolen. And what the really grabbed me and hooked me was the story about your father being a police officer for a year and what happened during that. And if you want to tell our audience a little bit about that story and kind of what perked your whole interest in this.
Yeah, I mean, I was literally like, it was May of 2021, and I was literally just scrolling through Facebook one evening, and I came across a post that my brother had written. And it was a post about my dad, about our dad. And my brother said that when my dad was a police officer in the late 1970s, he was stationed in rural Saskatchewan. He was a special constable with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And he was on patrol one night and he saw a vehicle kind of swerving in the distance, and he thought the driver might've been drinking. So he pulled it over. And when he got to the driver's side window, he realized that he recognized the driver, that it was a priest who had abused him when he was at residential school. And my brother in this post said that my dad beat up that priest that night on the side of the road, and then, you know, expected there to be some repercussions, to get in trouble, for there to be a complaint to be made, but nothing ever happened. And it just became this story that he shared. And when I read it on Facebook, like, I can still remember the feeling I had of just like a punch in the gut, because I knew my dad had gone to a residential school, but I really, that's all I knew. I didn't know where he went or for how long or anything about his experience. And this revelation that he had been sexually abused by a priest there, it really shook me. You know, it made me really immediately understand my dad in a new way. But also it was just haunting, you know, it was just devastating to learn that. But it helped me make sense of my childhood a little bit, because my father, you know, when I was a kid, he struggled a lot. He drank a lot, and he was very abusive and violent. And that really like affected our relationship my whole life. And he passed away about 10 years ago now. And I think I had always thought that maybe I would, you know, I would take the time to reconcile or learn more about him. But I never had the chance to do that. And when I heard this story from my brother about his experience at this school, it felt like I had an opportunity to do that. And so I decided to try to find out more about my dad's experience at this residential school. I discovered he went to the St. Michael's Indian Residential School. And I also decided that I wanted to try to find the priest who abused him.
And what I thought was really powerful too, you talked to his siblings too, and they knew all about it. And all these traumatic things that we keep inside and don't talk about must have been healing for them in some sense.
I hope so. Honestly, I hope so. Like, I'm still in awe of the generosity of my aunts and uncles, my dad's brothers and sisters, who opened up and shared with me, because my dad was one of 16 siblings to go to St. Michael's. Like, you know, he and all his brothers and sisters went there. He went when he was 6 years old, a native Cree speaker, didn't speak any English. You know, in Canada, there's this terrible history of residential schools. They were open for over 100 years. There were over 100 across the country. I know it's a similar story in the U.S. in terms of boarding schools, but the goal, I think, was very similar on both sides of the border. And it was assimilation, like to assimilate Indigenous people, to take children deliberately away from their families and parents and communities and deprive them of their language and culture and try to assimilate them. And so many people had an experience like my father of being deeply traumatized by that abuse, by that attempted genocide. And so many people experienced sexual abuse. And when we started looking, you know, started asking questions, you know, I was really unsure if my aunts and uncles would want to talk about it. You know, my dad, like I never, like I said, I never talked about it with him. So many people in both sides of my families had an experience at residential school that we just never spoke about or talked about. And I was just so amazed at how open my aunts and uncles were and how they did want to talk about it. And they shared so much with me. And I know that part of that was them wanting me to know my dad in a way that they knew him and to understand him. And I still feel so emotional about that, honestly, because that's such a gift that they gave me in helping me understand my dad and about what they all went through. But I hope it also was a positive experience for them to maybe tell some of their story and share some of their story in a space where they were respected and they had space and agency in terms of how much they wanted to share and what they wanted to share. So I'm just so grateful to them for that.
You know, we have a question here of what are your core values that lead in your work? And I think you're really dancing on that. Can you speak a little deeper in that? Because, you know, I talk about this a lot on our show that we've kind of lost a couple generations. And I, being a former high school teacher, am really excited to see our Gen Zs really pick up the mantle and do things that we never did. You know, in 1978, mm-hmm. up till 1978, when I was a junior in high school, we couldn't pray our own way, you know? And so there's all these things that I feel like you're picking up and moving the curtain aside so people can see really what's happened to our indigenous communities over the years. So what do you feel like how your core values fit into your work?
I feel like it's my core values inform everything about my work, honestly. Like, you know, I grew up, on my reserve with my family. You know, I come from an incredible family. Both my grandparents on my mom's side were residential school survivors. My grandma actually ran away from the residential school she was sent to. And it was in another province. Like, so she and a friend ran away and made it home, and she never went back to school after that. But the thing that's so incredible about my grandmother is that, you know, she grew up in rural Saskatchewan, which is especially back then, I think, just so racist in terms of its treatment mm-hmm. towards Indigenous people. And she just never backed down from anyone. Like, she was my favorite story about her is that, like, you know, you'd go into the cafe in town and people would stare at you if you came in and you were Native. And that she said that you know, she would, or my mom told me that she would look at people, like people would be staring at them, and she would look at them and say boo. Like, she was not frightened at all, and she would not back down. And I feel like just having the gift of like, they helped raise me, both my grandparents, just having that instilled in you from the time you were a kid, that you know, we're proud of our family. Our family is the most important thing. Like, this strong sense of not just love of your family, but responsibility to your family and to your community. And I feel like that's something that I take, you know, I take with me wherever I go, and I'm trying to pass on to my child as well. And I mean, I just think that all of my experience as an Indigenous woman has informed everything that I'm bringing to my work. And I think that the way that I try to bring that into work is like the respect that we give people in the communities that we meet and the space we try to create for them.
You know, we're talking with Connie Walker and her latest project, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's, that you can hear exclusively on Spotify. Do you have a question, Zoe? I don't know if you have your hand raised there, or or I'm hallucinating.
yes, I do. Okay. It's kind of a two-parter, Connie, but you spoke earlier about a little bit about the power of story. And I was just wondering, you know, you touched on a little bit of the impact that sharing this story has had within your family. But I was just wondering if you could share a little bit about the reception you've had for, like, most of your podcasting work, since you are exposing some really deep-seated and harmful truths, but really important things to share. And then, and I can remind you of this after you finish, but the second question was just, what advice do you have for anybody, you know, trying to do this work or just trying to shed some light on some really painful things happening in their own community or within their family? So, yeah, those are my questions. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for those questions. I mean, I've been blown away by the reception of the podcast. You know, I was really, really concerned about, obviously, not just audience reaction, but specifically my family, right? You know, because this is something that I feel like was so sensitive for all of us. And it's like, it's just been, they've been so supportive. And I heard from, like, you know, I obviously come from a big family. My dad is one of 16 kids on Beardies, and I have so many first cousins. I probably couldn't even name them all. but I heard from so many of our family members who said that, you know, they felt like this was their story about them and their dad. And I, not just my family. I heard that from other people as well. And I think that we try to hold these things close because they're painful, because they're so difficult. And it's a totally understandable reaction to want to have that fear, to expose them. But I feel like it's been such a healing thing for me to have things be exposed and to shine a light and to kind of let go of any of the stigma or shame that's associated with those intergenerational effects of residential schools and colonization. And if you're somebody who's thinking of taking on a personal story or who's thinking of talking about these really difficult issues, like I, you know, first want to just empathize with you because I know that that's hard. I know it's difficult work. And I was really, I think I have been lucky to have such a supportive, a network of family and friends, but then also colleagues, like people who share in the work with me. And surviving St. Michael's was such a personal story, but it was 100% a team effort and it was actually the first time where I got to work with other Indigenous journalists on the podcast, because most of my career I you know, there were other Indigenous journalists obviously working alongside, but I'd never worked with an Indigenous producer before, and that was really integral. So I think if you can find supportive people and allies, that's so important and crucial. But also, you know, I really believe that the power of storytelling and the power, if you have control, if you have agency, and if you're given respect to share your story, that can be a really important healing tool. And I've seen it. I've seen it, you know, in finding Cleo. Like it was a lesson for me in terms of the way that Johnny and Christine walk through that story in the way that they did. Honestly, like I was in awe of them the whole time. And then
locally grown radio, your home for news, talk and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Weigh in on their actual lives. Wow. But they were willing to engage, and it was just incredible to see how powerful they were through that experience, and that was an inspiration for me as well.
Well, Connie, we're going to wrap this up. We know time's tight for everybody here, and I just want to say we're with Connie Walker, and we're talking about her latest project, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's, that you can see exclusively on and listen to exclusively on Spotify. I just want to end with one more question here, and is there anything you would like to say to our audience before we wrap up?
I mean, I'm just so grateful to you guys for making this show and for making space for these really important conversations and trying to highlight all the incredible work that's being done, you know, across North America. It's just, I feel like this is such an exciting time for Indigenous people to be supported in sharing our stories and raising our voices. And I'm inspired, like, you know, every day by all of the incredible people out there like you guys who are doing this work. So thank you very much.
And we are too. And that's been the opportunity I've had here for 7 years on Native Roots Radio, is to see people like yourself doing the work and really doing it well. And yeah, just really happy that you were able to come on. We were with Connie Walker. I just want to say, Pinagigi, thank you. Her latest project, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's, on Spotify. So we really appreciate you, Connie. Thank you so much, Zoe. Thank you for setting this up. And thank you, Jamie. We'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. Even though Auto Technical is a small nonprofit, we have helped more families with transportation than any organization in Minnesota. Since 1994, we have reconditioned donated vehicles so they have a higher tax benefit. Call Richard at 612-919-5526. 612-919-5526 or autotech.org.
A lot has changed since 2020. Metro Transit wants to hear from you to help build a network that best serves the Metro's needs for the next 5 years. Help us grow the right way as more resources, like more drivers, become available. Learn more, fill out an online survey, and find out about upcoming meetings in your neighborhood at metrotransit.org/network-now. metrotransit.org/network-now. Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm here with Zoe Allen.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Oh, good one. Wow, what an awesome show. Really, we're excited to have Connie Walker on and talk about the documentaries and her work up there. And again, I just want to say, her latest project was Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's, and it's an in-depth story about her father and what he went through. And I don't know, I really felt so much genuine good vibes, Zoe, from Connie today. Very appreciative of our work and what's going on, but really, you know, we're just here to amplify others. And what did you take from the interview, take away with?
I just think Connie is one of the people doing the work that doesn't need you know, the kind of like fame and all of the acclaim that comes with it. She's really doing it for the community. And I think it's really important that in this moment, we really turn and give platform and hear from the people that are doing that work, that are doing it humbly. And like she talked about, you know, her values are everything. Like, her core values are at the heart of everything she does. And so I think it's just really it's really great seeing somebody that is as successful as she is with her journalistic work. That's also just still staying so true to her community, because it's very easy to get your head, you know, stuck up in the clouds and chase the money and kind of lose sight of what our communities really need. So I think, yeah, that was one of the biggest things of just the type of person that she is. And it, her work speaks for itself. Like, you know, you can listen to, you know, you listen to the interview and she's a really great person, but also just listening to her podcast, you can see that she walks the walk and talks the talk, you know.
There's so many people, Zoe, that I've told they should listen to Finding Cleo. And it's, I believe it's 10 hours or 12 hours, and it's definitely worth it. And I've turned people onto it, and they've, you know, everybody, I mean, there's that big murder mystery kind of podcast people are into, and I've told people about this, and they've been really impressed. And I think also there's a lot of history plugged into what Finding Cleo had done. In other words, just like Surviving St. Michael's, but that's one of the things that I really appreciate is when, especially Connie, what Connie did was put our Native history and how it parallels with what, you know, Cleo was going through, or Cleo's family, or what her father was going through during Surviving St. Michael's. I appreciate that, and I learn, and I remember, you know, some things that I might have forgot about history and genocide and boarding schools and adoption and ICWA and all these things that we still deal with.
Right. Right. No, I think, and she has, just for listeners to understand, she has 2 seasons of Stolen on Spotify, and then 2 seasons of Missing and Murdered. One is on Finding Cleo, and then the other is on another case. And those, the Missing and Murdered podcast, you can find those anywhere, but the Stolen series is only on Spotify. But yeah, no, I think it's a really big testament to, you know, connecting an individual story to a broader issue, because they talk about it all the time. MMIW, our work, is that our women, our children, and our men, they become numbers. And then we don't have their stories. We don't see their faces and think of all the lives that they had lived before that moment. And so it is, I think, super imperative that people constantly realign themselves to realize that these are families, these are people whose lives were stolen way too early, and that this isn't just a story to be sensationalized or glorified, because that happens so often in the true crime community. Like, so many stories have been commodified and glorified for Hollywood's benefit, and it's really disparaging to see that, because it's really disrespectful to the victims and their families.
Wow. 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 Great points. Great point, Zoe. Well, we got less than a minute left here. And again, it was great to have Connie on. We also talked a little about the University of Minnesota. That we'll probably dig in deeper and get a couple guests on and talk about that, because that's in our backyard. And that's, again, it's 2023, and we're talking about these things that happened not that long ago, but should have been taken care of a long time ago. So it's kind of one of those things.
Yeah. And I just wanted to put this graphic up in our last couple of seconds here, just for people to understand. I put it up in the first segment, but you may not be able to read it all the way, but you can at least see how many dots are on the map of these are land grab universities. So all of these universities have land that, of course, was indigenous land and was taken from their respective communities and given to institutions of higher learning. And, you know, they did with them what they wanted to. So that's what we're talking about. And I hope that we're going to continue to see this trend of returning land to indigenous people.
Right on. Hey, Pina Gigi, Zoe, for all the work you've done today, and for Native Roots Radio, and for our community. I really appreciate it. If you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground in which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. We're still here. We're the seventh generation. Free Leonard Peltier now. Yeah, you got it.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player
and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care. And they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Your hometown news talk and